So, welcome back to the Birdie Bug Pod,
episode 58. Oh, first episode of 2026.
Yes, a little bit delayed, but...
We are, it might be too late, but Happy New Year.
Yeah, everyone. Happy New Year to all of our, obviously to our listeners.
Millions of listeners, and hope everyone had a good Christmas and end to 2025. It is a little bit late, but I think that's always going to happen around festive period, isn't it? Lots of things going on.
Well, life gets in the way, doesn't it, sometimes, and hey, it doesn't matter, does it?
It is nice to be back, and we're doing an episode that's become a little bit of a yearly tradition for us, which we're now going to have a big bit of silence cut out because I forgot the word tradition, and that is to look back at the past year and do a positive news roundup from across the globe. So whereas we're normally very focused on sort of UK stories, we've done a few European ones, but we're normally quite focused on where we live. This is our yearly chance to look at all the good stuff that happened and hopefully balance out all the bad news that we're normally sort of battered with.
Yeah, and we really like this one. I think this might be our third one we've done now.
And it's a nice one to research for us because we get to read about the good stuff that's happened.
Definitely, because you don't sort of, you know, normally dig into positive news or nature news from, you know, the Americas or Oceania, and it gives you a chance to look at all the good stuff that is going on around the world. And there is a lot of good stuff.
Yeah, and I will say it is harder to find... Like you have to go digging for it, whereas obviously all the bad stuff hits all the headlines. So it is a little bit of a challenge.
Look, mate, I've got Antarctica and there's no more of a challenge than
that. I did that last year, so it's your turn to do it. So if you haven't listened to these episodes before, like I think we did it the first time around, but like last year, we've divided up the continent. So we each have three continents and we'll go through them like that. But before we get going, any catch-up or anything like that you want to chat?
A little bit of a catch-up. I don't know whether I mentioned this in the last pod, actually. I started a little shop. I might have actually mentioned that I was going to. I started a little shop on the website selling a few mugs with photos on.
Plug the URL.
And, you know, shameless plug here at birdinthelens.com. So I started that. Obviously, Christmas has got in the way.
Hang on, just quickly. I think you forgot to mention that, A, they're sort of themed. You've got, like, your curly range at the moment.
Yeah.
And that the... a percentage of all the profits is going to a relevant charity.
I started it for a particular reason. I started it with having become a Curlew Action ambassador. Obviously, I'm trying to help out as much as I can. So I started a little shop, started with some Curlew products, mugs and coasters and chopping boards. And then, a percentage of all of the sales we're going to donate to Curlew Action. So that makes me feel, you know, warm and fuzzy inside. So, and that's a good thing.
Yeah, and so go get all your Curlew merch. And you've got Robins out. And
got Robins out. And I'm going to do Kingfishers, and hopefully we're going to do the same thing with the Rivers Trust.
Yeah, so it's a nice cause.
That's something to look forward to. What else? Weather's been a bit up and down. We had a really nice frosty week, and I got out and about a bit, do a bit of photography. Apart from that, not really. Christmas has sort of gotten in the way, hasn't it, of catch-up? It's been Christmas.
Yeah, it's been Christmas. Sort of seeing family and doing Christmassy things.
I'm not one for doing New Year's resolutions, but I did want to just say, obviously, you've got a really big event to look forward to, which is going to be a big distraction for most of the year. But and I'm not one for sort of making goals, but there are things that I want to do this year or change this year. I want to do less screen time, less doom scrolling and more reading. I've got back into doing a little bit of drawing, which I'm really enjoying. But certainly reading, I need to read more books this year, and I'm really enjoying doing that. So that was one of my things. I didn't know whether there's some places I want to go as well. Like I say, I'm going to go to Skomer Island for the first time to see the puffins.
That'll be cool. Looking forward to seeing your photos from that.
Really looking forward to that. And there's a few other places I'd really like to get to this year. So I want to get out and about more, aside from my range ring. I want to get out and about and outdoors more. So how about you?
I
know you've got a big...
I don't think I've mentioned it on the podcast yet, but I'm having a baby. So the main goal for 2026
I'm going to be a grandfather.
Yeah, is dealing and learning how to look after a baby. So that's my main goal.
Which is so exciting. I cannot wait.
Learn how to do
so you're going to be pretty distracted, aren't
you? Yeah, I mean, same as you. I'm trying to, and I've already started trying to cut down time on social media.
Yeah.
And if I'm going to look at screens, I'd rather do a video game that I enjoy, and also, like I say, read a bit more. Wife and I would quite like to go up to Scotland at some point.
Yeah.
With the little baby, or we'll leave the baby with you.
That's normally the way, isn't it?
But yeah, so as far as goals and places I want to go, I'm not too sure what life's going to look like, really. Yeah, so the main goal is,
well, mate, learn how to be a dad. However tired you think you've been in the past, you,
yeah, well, I'm sure
you don't really understand tired till you've had a baby.
When I stop making sense on the podcast,
Now, what an amazing thing that'll be to talk about on the podcast in a few months' time.
Exactly. So that'll be, I might actually have catch up for a change.
Yeah, fantastic. So. Anyway, we better crack on because we've got a lot to get through. So,
yeah.
What we've done is we, as Matt said, we've split the continents up. This year I've got Antarctica, the Americas, and Oceania.
Yeah, and I'm doing Africa, Europe, and Asia. So we've swapped from
and
last year.
All the continents are, you know, we could talk for about 10 hours on all the stuff. So we've had to be a bit selective on just the odd, you know, heartwarming story or good conservation story, good news story. And so we're just going to pick a few out on each of the continents.
Try to keep them relatively short because otherwise you have a risk of them all being long. And we can leave lots of links down. I have got one particularly long one because I got a bit down a rabbit hole with it. But I think, as we've alluded to, well, we certainly spoke about it last year, Antarctica is definitely the hardest one. So do you want to kick it off with a challenge?
I'm going to start with Antarctica because it might be quite short. And obviously, we all are aware that, you know, it's in the news all of the time that Antarctica
But there's also less there, isn't there?
Yeah,
you haven't got a big range of habitats.
I found out some fascinating things that I didn't know.
I'll kick it off, then.
You know, it's a massive continent covered by an ice sheet that averages about a mile thick. And what I didn't know is that ice sheet contains 60% of the Earth's fresh water, and I didn't know that.
Yeah, it's a lot of water.
Which is staggering, which is obviously makes it a sort of critical factor in determining future sea levels, which is why it's always in the news, isn't it? And why climate change, of course, has a big bearing on that. But there are a few positive news stories around Antarctica. This one might be surprising, and it has come from a reliable source, but Antarctica has gained 200 billion tons of ice during the recent 2-year period.
I mean, that
is surprising
good news.
Scientists. And it says, while Antarctica ice sheet loss has averaged around 147 gigatons per year.
How much is a gigaton?
I should have looked into that. I don't know, but it sounds a lot, doesn't it?
I'm going to Google it while you're talking.
It does sound a lot. But apparently, it has gained 200 billion tons of ice. Obviously, not 200 gigatons. But that sounds like a good news
that
story,
is a good
doesn't
news
it?
Story.
It has been driven by unusually high precipitation levels, apparently, but it has offset the predicted 3 millimetres of sea level rise by about a quarter of the total rise seen during the 2010s. So it's quite a lot.
That is good. Would you like to know how much a gigaton is?
I'd love to.
Apparently, it's 1 billion metric tons, or 1 trillion kilograms.
It is a lot, isn't it?
So that is.
Anyway,
that is a lot. Anyway,
I mean, you weren't expecting to hear that Antarctica has gained ice.
No, that is definitely a good news story.
That's a good one. Another good news story, blue whales. Really good news stories about the blue whale population in Antarctica, which obviously was drastically reduced by commercial whaling. There used to be 200,000 to 300,000. And I think they recorded in 1926, there were about 125,000 individual blue whales in Antarctica. And that was reduced to 3,000 individuals by 2018. But the blue whale population is believed to be making a really strong recovery. And, of course, that's come about because of the ban on commercial whaling.
Yeah, that is a fantastic news story.
There is still, of course, a lot of illegal whaling going on. And one of the big factors for blue whale decline was loss of krill or overfishing krill, which sadly still goes on. But recently, I think there were 55 animals identified in just one sighting in a survey recently. So
I almost feel like we should do an episode on blue whales.
I'd like to do that. Incredible
animal. As the world's largest animal that's ever
lived. And loudest.
Yeah. So maybe we'll do an episode
on
that.
I think we
should. That's great news.
So that's really good news. In fact, there's a lot of good whale news for Antarctica. Fin whales also making a dramatic comeback. Their population was reduced to 1% of its original size, of course, through hunting again. During the 20th century, but groups of 150 whales were being spotted, a spectacle unknown since the start of the 20th century.
That's an incredible sight, 150 whales.
Humpbacks as well, humpback whales. I think we might have mentioned that in our last one a year ago.
I was going to say, I seem to remember the positive news I did around Antarctica was definitely about whales, but it wasn't the blues.
No, I think it was humpbacks last year were making a good recovery, and they still are.
That's
so
good too. Nice to sort of catch up and revisit it a year later.
That's really good. So something other than whale news, the hole in the Antarctic ozone layer shrunk to its smallest size since since 2019. That's and they reckon they could be on track for a complete recovery by 2060. They reckon it will be completely recovered. Obviously, that comes from the ban of the use of CFCs in aerosols and things like that, which is one of the reasons, one of the factors that I think it was ozone-depleting chlorofluorocarbons, CFCs.
It was one of those...
From coolants in refrigerators and aerosol sprays, and of course there was that big...
Yeah, it's actually one of the few like genuinely successful climate stories where we identified a hole in the ozone, banned the problem, and it's recovered.
Recovering
and it the whole really world just dramatic. Went, okay, we'll ban it, and it worked. And it's a shame we haven't done that with everything else. But
it is a shame.
It's a nice example of how it can actually we can fix things.
Now, this is one that isn't necessarily. Well, I suppose it is a good news story, but it was quite a fun story that penguin poo creates clouds that help cool the planet. And Antarctica's number one cutest animal might be saving the planet with its number two.
Oh, apparently. What heroes.
A study published in Communications Earth and Environment finds that ammonia released from penguin guano, yes, their poo, may help form clouds that insulate the Earth and prevent sea ice from melting.
That is really cool. I've never heard bird poo referred to as guano. I thought that was only bats.
No, it is guano. Oh, it's all seabird. That's guano all over the cliffs.
I've only ever heard it referred to as bats. That's interesting. That's we learned something new. But that's a great story. I like
which
that.
Is a really good story, isn't it? And then there was another thing which I thought was quite interesting in relation to the reduction in ice in Antarctica, because there are actually some positives coming out of that, which I was quite surprised about. Research led by polar scientists from Northumbria University has revealed new hope in natural environmental systems found in East Antarctica, which could help mitigate the overall rise of carbon dioxide in the atmosphere over long timescales. So as the Antarctica's ice sheets thin due to climate change, apparently newly exposed mountain peaks could significantly increase the supply of vital nutrients to the southern oceans. And scientists with expertise in oceanography have looked at all the analysis of sediment samples, and they discovered that weathered rocks, which are exposed above the ice surface, contain iron concentrations up to 10 times higher than previously reported. Now, what the good thing about that is it fuels the growth of phytoplankton.
Yeah.
And that those marine organisations, as I think we might have talked about before, absorb CO2 through photosynthesis.
Yeah, that's incredible.
So even though it's pretty bad that the ice flow is melting, there are some positives that come out of that. So I thought that was a good news story.
I think, that's brilliant. It did make me chuckle that you called them marine organisations instead of organisms.
Did I? Oh, damn.
Lots of organisations.
I can't even cut that out now, can I?
No, you've got to leave it in.
You could have just laughed at the time.
I thought I'd let you finish. I didn't want to interrupt.
Because now I've got that embarrassing, it's going to be left in.
Yeah, it's fine. It was only...
did I say marine organisations?
Yeah, they're very organised.
They are organised.
They've got CEOs and the whole thing.
The organisms are... Did I say microscopic marine organisations?
Yeah, I'm pretty sure.
No.
Sugar. We don't swear.
Okay. I think that might be...
Well, I was going to say...
It. There's one other story. Scientists were in Antarctica when a giant iceberg broke free. We're talking about the... reduction in ice, which is not a good thing, but they found in its shadow an amazing amount of biodiversity when it did break away. Giant sea spiders, ice fish, octopuses, not octopi, are among the surprisingly abundant creatures that scientists have found in a stretch of sea that used to be covered by ice. So it is full of biodiversity, full of life.
Whenever you see documentaries or YouTube videos or whatever on the organisms that live in, especially the organisms that live in like Antarctica, like the sea spiders and stuff that lives in the sort of typically dark and cold waters. Yeah. They are really cool, interesting, and kind of a bit spooky. But that's fascinating.
Anyway, that's about all I've got.
Well, I was about to say, considering Antarctica was the one that normally has the fewest stories and is the biggest challenge, buckle in, it's going to be a long episode.
I've dug a few out, haven't
I? So, you did really well.
Yeah, okay, that's about it, really.
Brilliant. Well, I will kick off my continent, I think, with Africa, because there's some really cool stuff going on, and I'm going to have to try and not take too long because I got a bit excited by some of them. This is a nice quick one. So, and also I should sort of caveat this or give this a warning. I'm going to mispronounce a lot of places because...
Okay, well, I mispronounce organisms.
Yeah, because
so.
Some of these I'm going to butcher. But a new group of gorillas successfully habituated in Dzanga Sanga, is how I'm going to say it. So it's a protected area, and essentially these efforts to habituate a new group of Western lowland gorillas has been really successful. And this followed a sort of a sad story of the death of some of the resident silverbacks from all three of the protected areas. And basically a really quick response and some fantastic work by conservationists have restored those populations. And a silverback named Limo now leads the gorilla group, and tourists can view them as well. And basically the success has been attributed to just incredible experience from the teams and the fact that so many people have been part of previous efforts, all came
like
together
that story.
And restored.
And aren't they just magnificent animals?
And so it's lovely. And I mean, I saw a few gorilla stories, a rare, although this one actually happened in 2026, so I didn't include it, but a pair of twins, of silverback twins, have been born.
Oh, wow.
In a really rare event.
That's unusual,
isn't
it?
The pictures were incredible. Technically not 2025, but gorilla twins have been born,
wow.
Which I thought was brilliant.
I reckon I've always thought that must be the most amazing experience when you see. I know it's an eco-tourist thing.
But done well.
And obviously, if it's helping to protect and restore the environment and what have you. But it must be an amazing experience to see the animal like that, because
a
silverback gorilla is just a thing of magnificence, isn't it?
But to see, you know, following a sad story of the loss of some of the resident ones, really quickly be sort of dealt with and the population's restored, I think is just
it's heartwarming. That's a heartwarming story. I like that one.
This is another brilliant one where AI and some other clever bits of technology have reduced rhino poaching in Kenya in some regions down to absolute zero.
Wow.
So more than 80% of Kenya's rhinos can be found in 11 of the country's reserves, which obviously therefore face the highest risk of poaching. But despite the sort of very persistent threat of that, Kenya has succeeded in reducing and in some cases halting poaching. And it's been come about through a collaboration between WWF Teledyne FLIR, which is like a camera company, and Kenya Wildlife Services to deploy thermal cameras to keep an eye on poachers and AI software, which essentially can detect humans, wildlife, vehicle movement. And if any intrusion or suspicious activity is detected, the cameras automatically send alerts back to the operation teams, allowing rangers to respond really quickly. So if anything is picked up on these thermal cameras that looks a bit dodgy, rangers are out there as soon as possible. And this happened in Olpejita. That's how I'm going to say it. It's a game reserve, and it's home to some of the largest populations of the critically endangered black rhinos. And they've achieved zero poaching in some of the regions through...
That is incredible. I've seen films in the past where the populations of black rhinos have got down to dangerously close to extinction levels. So that's a great story.
Yeah, it was fantastic. And a rare positive AI nature story as well, which I thought was quite good. I actually have the really quick little rhino summary because some of it covered Africa and Asia, but the black rhino global population rose from 6,195 to 6,788. So it has gone up slightly as well, which is brilliant. But
that's great.
Great. I mean, I did not expect to hear halted and down to zero poaching in some regions. Yeah. So it's clearly working really well. I'm going to rattle off two quick ones before I do one of my slightly longer ones. So elephants relocated in Sumara, which is in South Africa. It's a reserve for Addo elephants were relocated to establish a population that's been missing from the region for over 150 years. And the reintroduction of them sort of accompanies a really nice success story anyway, because the ecosystem is growing brilliantly. There's been the birth of new lion cubs. There's been quite a lot of rewilding of that pride. Their father, Shola, has been introduced just a few months prior and is already having cubs, which I think is brilliant. And then the first hooded vulture nest found in, KwaZulu-Natal?
You've got some really great names.
They're really hard. KwaZulu, I think, there's no other way to say that. So the discovery was made during the 2025 Zululand Vulture Project Aerial Survey. And it's basically marks a record breeding site for this critically endangered species. There's only an estimated 50 to 100 breeding pairs left in the country.
Low.
And this single,
I love a good bird conservation story.
Yeah, this single nest offers a real hope for the survival of a species that's under a lot of threats. It's confirmed that the hooded vulture nest contained a large chick, offering new data on sort of around the species breeding range and breeding habits. I haven't really looked into the hooded vulture before. It's smaller and quite an elusive species compared to other vultures. It weighs between 1.5 to 2.5 kilos. Still has a wingspan of 1.6 meters.
Yeah, it's a big bird.
Still a big bird. Monogamous, but they only lay one egg a year, which is why they're obviously suffering if the populations take a hit. And there's not very much known about their breeding behavior or anything like that. So this new nest is really crucial for understanding them and making sure that people know how to sort of plan the conservation efforts. So there was a lot of positive quotes and stuff around discovering this nest.
Fantastic. Like that.
Right. This is my chunky one.
Okay.
Because I got a bit excited.
like you do.
And it's got another name that I can't pronounce. So it's in Mozambique. Gorongosa National Park has become essentially one of Africa's most incredible conservation achievements. And a lot of this goes back past 2025, but there was lots of good things out of last year as well. And it's being called a living example of how science, community partnership and long-term commitment can revive an ecosystem lost to conflict because there was a big civil war. The park is 1,500 square miles. It encompasses floodplains, forests, savannas, the towering slopes of Mount Gorongosa, which I'm fairly confident with that pronunciation. And the habitats are healthier than they have been in decades. And I've got lots of information and I won't go into all of it because there's just too much. But a lot of the wildlife and habitats were hit quite hard by a civil war, and the effort to bring it back has been incredible. In 2025, hydrological studies confirmed that restored wetlands and forest catchments are stabilizing water flow across the season, especially the dry season, supporting wildlife and agriculture. Mammal populations have grown by more than 700% compared to a decade ago.
That's incredible.
New monitoring flights in 2025 showed expanding herds of waterbuck, sable, bush, pigs and buffalo. Elephants and lions continue to rebound. Painted wolves are now firmly re-established after decades of absence. In 2025 again, the Mount Gorongosa recorded one of its most significant biodiversity milestones in recent history. Surveys conducted by the E.O. Wilson Biodiversity Lab documented an increase in pollinator diversity across upper altitude forests, including several rare butterfly species not seen since the early 1990s.
Wow.
So I've even got more. Today, approximately 200 lions roam in the region. You've got wild dogs, leopards, hyenas all have functioning, healthy populations, although still vulnerable to habitat loss across a lot of Africa. There's so much here in this national park, and it's another reason why I wanted to mention it is it's another really good example of ecotourism doing well, because ecotourism has been fundamental to the success with visitor sort of guides and the jobs that's provided supporting and funding the infrastructure. It provides revenue for anti-poaching units and education programs. As the tourism grows, more locals get involved in jobs as rangers, researchers, hospitality, and in 2025, they've updated visitor experiences with nature trails, community and cultural visits, all sorts of stuff. And I'll finish by just saying that at the moment, as of today, more than 1,600 people are employed directly through the park, and the tourism revenue supports the conservation management. So it's a really nice cycle of wildlife protection and human development together.
That's it. That is fantastic. And I was really, really surprised. When I was looking at going to Costa Rica, I was researching the most biodiverse and countries that protected their nature and more than any other. And they did a top 10 league. And I was really surprised to find that five of those top 10 were African countries like Botswana. They're absolutely, and we kind of had this perception that everything gets poached in Africa.
Or there's wars, or there's drought.
You know, and wildlife sort of takes a backward step to everything else. And actually couldn't be further from the truth. Africa is one of the continents that is trying so hard to protect and restore. And like that story you've just given there. And I was so surprised about that. And it's amazing because what an incredible continent.
Yeah, and I just thought that I actually hadn't heard of this park.
Yeah,
and apart
amazing.
From the fact that it's an incredible example of ecotourism, the bounce back, I mentioned the stat that they've got more than 200 lions there.
Yeah.
Prior to that, there was a tiny like injured remnant of a population, is what they called. And once all the prey came back, the lions have come back. And everything from the megafauna to the pollinators to the wetlands.
It's incredible how quickly it restores leave it.
Yeah, you've even got things like they've got a pangolin program, which is one of the most important parts of the park and one of their biggest missions.
And we know that's one of the most threatened animals in the world,
isn't
it?
Since 2018, more than 100 pangolins have been rescued, rehabilitated.
Yeah.
Several more have been confiscated from traffickers, and they treat injured animals, fit them with monitoring tags, release them into secure areas, and they've got local communities protecting them as well. And it was just every part of this story is why I've got so many notes, which I haven't even covered.
Well, I think that's also a theme as well, is that more and more they're getting local communities involved, because, of course, they've got the knowledge, haven't they, of their environment and their habitat and their wildlife. And
yeah, exactly.
You know, and you get those. You get the local people involved.
It's a bit like when Josh was here talking about his trip, the local guides that he worked with out there, and how important they are to the conservation success. And again, you know, this park and ecotourism and wildlife conservation project is employing 1,600 people. So
fantastic.
It's
that's brilliant. That's a fantastic story.
I realise I've covered quite a lot in Africa, but this was also a very cool one from the Democratic Republic of Congo, where a species of antelope was rediscovered in remote wetlands of the, Kamalondo, I'm going to go with, has essentially reignited hope of one of Africa's most elusive antelopes, the Upemba Luchi. Even that was hard to say, which has been unseen by science for decades. And apparently it even got to the point where people were wondering whether it was just, you know, a legend. It was not even a real species.
Oh.
But in March of 2025, an aerial survey picked up and observed a few of these rare antelopes moving through the swamps. Most of them vanished into the reeds, but one individual got snapped on a camera and properly identified. And so, I mean, they once numbered in thousands back in the 1970s, but the population absolutely plummeted during years of poaching. And the recent aerial count only found about 10 individuals, suggesting there might only be up to 100 of them. But people thought they were gone forever, and there is actually a population surviving
now. So that must have been really exciting to see that. They must have been well stoked to see that, mustn't they?
They sound incredible. They've got long, lyre-shaped horns, and they're adapted to living in swamps. So their limbs are like perfect.
Incredible.
So they're a wetlands specialist antelope, which is just so cool.
Yeah,
but now,
that is so cool.
Finish that, because okay, cool, found an antelope, but what are the chances of it surviving? Following the discovery, immediate conservation actions are being prioritised to safeguard the population and reduce threats to its survival. So they're establishing permanent presence of rangers, conducting additional surveys across the region, collecting data on the pressures, and deploying community conservation teams modelled on the successful teams from other national parks, and training local residents to protect these antelopes. So they found them, and credit to the area, they're jumping on it to protect these rare
antelopes.
It'd
be amazing if that happened in this country.
I know.
Don't get political, however I'd like to.
Right. I've got more, but let's call it there, because I've done quite a lot in Africa. But it's safe to say that it was the continent out of mine that I found some of the coolest stories.
Some
of the rewilding and conservation efforts out there are just fantastic.
Yeah.
And so many people are out there fighting for the wildlife. Yeah. That
like I say, when I was looking at Costa Rica or going somewhere that was so biodiverse that all the African countries were popping up and the projects and the conservation projects that are going on across Africa are incredible. They are really amazing.
After feeling slightly like I've been battered by bad news across social media and sort of radio and stuff recently, it was a really nice evening spent reading about this conservation stuff going on. So
fantastic.
Yeah, well done to everyone doing all that work out there.
Definitely, definitely.
Right, I'll leave Africa there. I will stick lots of articles in the show notes, but otherwise I would end up doing a whole episode on them, and I've got a ton for Europe as well, so we better get cracking.
I'll go on to the Americas. I think we might have touched on this last year, but it was really heartwarming. I think everybody would be encouraged by the fact that Brazil, once a country that really had regimes that really didn't care about the Amazon rainforest, now are working so hard, this new government in Brazil working so hard to protect now the Amazon rainforest, to the point where they are hoping that deforestation will be down to zero in 2030.
Yeah, which is not that far away either.
That is the aim, and I think that's could be very ambitious. However, deforestation has dropped in all sorts of areas. The Cerrado ecosystem, which is a biodiversity hotspot, was 40% lower in October 2025 than in October 2024. That's 43%
drop. That's huge.
The government is providing forest funds. They've got a roadmap for deforestation, to end deforestation by 2030. And the funding, you know, up to $125 billion, which is £95 billion, through pledges to the fund for deforestation. And, of course, compensating, you know, loggers and what have you that are doing it. So that was a really good thing to see. And I think we did touch on that last year.
I think
we started that story last year, but it's really encouraging to see that the Brazilian government is following that commitment.
It's definitely probably the positive story I've seen the most consistently throughout the year.
Yeah.
It popping up each time there's been a milestone or a big drop and or a comparison that can be made. And so it's been really nice as a thread to follow to see it, to see all the work going on out there.
Yeah, absolutely. This one I think you might quite like, because it's to do with rivers and water. There's been a 25-year-long conservation program in the peaks and ridges of the mountains in Ecuador. It's a conservation program that's bearing succulent fruit in the form of cleaner water and abundant wildlife. It was established in 2000. It was a fund for the protection of water, has allowed a critical South American ecosystem, which is unique to the world and vital for plants and animals. And it's enabled it to reclaim vast tracts of former landscape. And people are really noticing the difference.
Well, that's great.
So the biodiversity, the wetlands have been restored. The change has been amazing. Vegetation is back. Animals, wildlife and insect population and bird population has absolutely escalated. And it shows how much can be achieved by simply letting rivers run free.
Yeah.
And I thought this was an interesting statistic. Each year, the global water sector spends $700 billion on building and repairing pipes and reservoirs, using grey solutions to engineer themselves out of a problem created by deforestation, agricultural changes or threats upstream. If we were able to reallocate just 1% of that spending towards protecting nature, it would eclipse all global philanthropic spending on conservation today.
Yeah, that's a huge statistic.
Isn't that incredible?
Yeah. I mean, We've spoken about it in our episodes to do with anything rivery, but things like nature-based solutions where you're relying on things like trees and wetlands and the species that look after them without necessarily our help and letting them work in their natural state is a far more effective and certainly a cheaper option than trying to build grey infrastructure, flood defences and things like that. It's far better to have floodplains that work.
And we need to learn from these kind of projects because they're so successful. Yeah. And
I think I mentioned in our Beaver episode, which was our last one, so if you didn't listen, go listen to Beaver episode. And I've mentioned it in a different positive news story about obviously the beavers in the Czech Republic that built a dam quicker than the government in the place they wanted and saved millions of euros because beavers are the best dam builders in the world.
Yeah, which is fantastic, isn't it? I liked this one. A 5-month-old jaguar cub has been spotted along the Bermejo River in northern Argentina's Gran Chaco region, marking the first wild-born cub in the area following a rewilding program at the El Impenetrable National Park by conservation non-profit Rewilding Argentina.
That's
the first time they've got jaguars back in there.
And what an incredible cat they are.
Oh, what an amazing animal that is. So they did a reintroduction program. The population, it was once a thriving population in this area and it got down to fewer than 20 individuals. No females have been recorded there in 2 decades. So they did a reintroduction program and the first jaguar cub has been found.
That's amazing. What a lovely story.
That's a great story. Protecting forest ecosystems with sound. I thought this was quite an interesting one.
Oh, I think I've not in the Amazon, but I've heard of these.
So in Costa Rica, researchers are pioneering the use of eco-acoustics to protect forests by recording and analysing sounds from ecosystems. I thought this was a really interesting one. This method allows them to monitor biodiversity, detect environmental threats, and evaluate the effectiveness of conservation strategies.
Yeah, I think I've seen it where they pick up the sounds of like chainsaws and loggers and things like that.
But also in one study, the presence of three wattled bellbirds, a species known for its powerful metallic calls, was used as an indicator of the health of a biological corridor, which was a crucial wildlife passage connecting key reserves. So a sound-based approach is revolutionising how conservationists assess ecosystems.
That is really interesting.
Which I thought was a really interesting one. I liked this one because it's, you know, we talk about dirty cities, particularly in America. Chattanooga becomes North America's first national park city. It's officially gone from grey to green, once dubbed the dirtiest city in America. The Tennessee city has undergone a stunning transformation and now joins London and Adelaide as a national park city.
I didn't even know London was a national park city.
So just 50 years ago, Chattanooga was so polluted that drivers had to use headlights during the day.
Oh, blimey. I tell you what, I might have to do maybe an episode or not, but I'd be interested to research more about national park cities because I didn't actually know that was a thing.
I didn't either. But today, thanks to community-led efforts, the city thrives with green spaces, clean rivers, and a strong commitment to environmental care. It's a place where nature isn't just preserved, it's prioritised. And by earning this title, Chattanooga proves that environmental change is not only possible, but really powerful.
That's amazing.
So that was a really good story, I thought.
God, London must be hanging on with its status with its rivers.
I love this one. 3 decades after walls were reintroduced to Yellowstone National Park, mature aspen trees are finally returning to the landscape.
It mitigates the overgrazing,
doesn't
it?
So they brought in predators and the overgrazing, obviously, decades of overabundant elk.
Yeah,
so
it was
they bring in a predator.
That story was a really famous example of where, when we eradicated all the wolves, big elk problem, humans tried to fix that problem by hunting, all sorts of things. Nothing worked, put the wolves back. It's all good. Yeah.
So it says now with wolves, bears and cougars back in the system, elk browsing pressure has eased, bringing relief to the aspens. They now have a chance to grow and mature into full stands. And these trees are critical for a wide range of wildlife, from beavers, obviously, to cavity nesting birds. And researchers say it's a rare large-scale example of how restoring predators can bring whole ecosystems back into balance. And that's the thing, isn't it? We've talked about that.
Spoke about it a lot.
Quite a lot. What else have I got? I'm nearly there, actually. Caribbean reef sharks rebound in Belize with shark fishers' help, which was really good. Endangered Caribbean reef sharks and other shark species are making a striking recovery after plummeting due to overfishing. And what they did is basically they got the fishermen, the shark fishers involved, told them how serious the population decline was, and they got involved. And I thought this was great because during COVID, the scientists couldn't go out and do the analysis and the monitoring. And so the shark fishers, who were trained by this time, took on some of that stuff and they took over doing the science and doing
that
the research.
Is an incredible
story. They've carried on doing that. And now they're balancing the level of fishing according to the population of sharks. So there's been an absolute, you know, a real spike in
shark population. That's amazing.
But that's getting the people that were actually killing them involved, educating them and saying, look, okay, we need to balance this. And they got on board.
You see it quite often.
I thought that was a great story.
In jungles, a lot of the people who were either poachers or wildlife catchers for trafficking, when they're turned into the rangers and the conservationists, they know the land better than anyone. And so they are, if you give them that option or that ability to get involved, they are an incredible resource.
Yeah, well, aside from anything else, they were going to say, if you carry on fishing at that rate, your livelihood's going to disappear. So they part-funded them to do the research as well. So they really got on board.
That's brilliant.
And say, took it on their own back to go and do it during COVID, which I thought was a great story.
That's fantastic.
That's pretty much me done with the Americas. I could have talked for ever.
Yeah, that is always the problem with these episodes. I mean, it's a nice problem to have,
but we're just trying to do some really good news
quick
stories.
Quick fire, good news stories. So I will, or maybe I'll skip ahead and do Asia and finish with Europe because I've got fewer stories for Asia. So I'm going to do that one first, actually, because I've got some particularly enjoyed reading about for Europe, and I'll finish there. So I'll do Asia next.
Okay.
So I've actually got two from Nepal, but I'll start with latest snow leopard population. Estimates show stable numbers. So Recently, they found a relatively stable population of 397 individuals. It's still not a lot, but it's nice to know that it's stable. It's the first robust estimate of the country's snow leopard population, which up until now was sort of only guesses and estimates based on sign surveys. So that's looking at tracks and poo and tree scrapes and things like that. And the information from the survey is absolutely vital for forming future conservation strategies to make sure that the species is properly protected. And it underscores Nepal's commitment and global leadership in snow leopard conservation. So,
what an amazing animal.
Stunning.
I remember seeing a film.
Really hard to monitor.
I remember seeing a film that Steve Baxwell did all about snow leopards, and it took them 3 years to get 20 minutes of film of a snow leopard because they were so rare, such a rare sighting. But what a beautiful animal that is.
They are
so
incredible.
That's a great story.
Amazing that we've got the numbers and they seem to be stable.
Brilliant.
Sticking with Nepal then, the world's smallest otter has been rediscovered in Nepal after 185 years of absence.
How small is it? Is that a quiz question?
It should have been. I actually don't have the stat for its size. Hang on, you can cut the dead air out. Let me have a look. Okay, I've got the... So the world's smallest otter rediscovered in Nepal after a long time with no sightings. It is pretty small. The total body length of 28.6 to 37.6 inches.
Oh, crikey, that is small.
So up to 96 millimetres, so just under, 960 millimetres, so just under a metre. Maximum weight of 3.5 kilos. It's the smallest otter species.
Wow.
Which is cool. Yeah. Anyway, back to the actual story. Rediscovered Nepal otters. Where were we? Here we go. So it came about halfway through a 3-year otter conservation project on the Lower Kanali River. Again, it's a WWF project. And the 3-year project was to reduce the threats, strengthen otter populations, and also support 200 households whose sort of livelihoods depend on that part of the river. And after this 185 years with no recorded sightings at all in Nepal, scientists have confirmed the presence of the otter species, the Asian small-clawed otter. So the actual project was looking after otters in general.
Yeah.
They weren't necessarily looking after the species which hadn't been sighted for so long. So it was a real pleasant surprise, and again a lot of really excited quotes came out of the project for these scientists out there looking after otters in general and rediscovering the world's smallest otter in Nepal. So far the project has formed 15 community river stretch management groups, and so they're getting all these people whose livelihood depend on the river really involved in protecting the wildlife there. They're stopping things like illegal fishing, illegal stone extraction. We've got 375 local community members receiving training on traditional gear, fish breeding seasons and eco-friendly fishing practices so they can survive but also protect the wildlife. A quote from someone called Komal Sunahar is, "I am an otter champion. I now conduct various community-based awareness campaigns on behalf of our river stretch management group." And there were loads of lovely quotes of these local residents who are getting involved in protecting the environment. There's a citizen science program out there as well, along with a smooth-coated otter identification monitoring protocol to again help the local communities track the populations, so that when the scientists and the funded 3-year project is over, the monitoring and the statistics and all the surveys are still going on. So it was sort of a nice two-part story of this 3-year otter conservation project and then the incredible discovery of the world's smallest
and
otter.
And who doesn't love an otter?
I know. So that was lovely.
Great. That's a great story.
A really quick one is in Indonesia, there's a group of women who are joining forces to protect proboscis monkeys from poaching. This year, essentially 6 women from the Mengkalang Jambu village were trained by Planet Indonesia to form a patrol of wildlife guardians, and they do monitoring from morning to night. They monitor villages, plantations, and they use motorbikes and foot patrols, and they're out there protecting the proboscis monkey. So I thought that was a cool story as well. Over to India, tiger population. So it's been very cat-themed with snow leopards, jaguars and tigers, but with India is home to 75% of the world's tigers, and that has doubled, or they have doubled their population to more than 3,600 in just over a decade, which was reported way back in January 2025. This 75% of the world's tigers' population live in an area spanning about 138,000 square kilometres, which is roughly half the size of the UK, apparently.
Right.
Alongside about 60 million people, and a huge amount of the conservation work has gone into protecting the tigers from poaching and habitat loss, but also helping the local communities sort of coexist with the tigers and not come into so much sort of conflict.
Yes, I think also they were trying to connect wildlife corridors as well, weren't they? Fragmented areas where the tigers had got fragmented, and they were trying to actually relink those.
Yeah, so a bit like sometimes on a much smaller scale in the UK, you'll see these sort of like green bridges over big roads so that the wildlife can get between woodlands and whatnot without coming into contact with people in cars. Same as in India, where instead of having tigers necessarily roaming through villages or coming into conflict with cities and stuff, it's connecting all their habitats. Yeah. But having the population double in just over a decade, and the fact that this part of, or India in general, is now home to 75% of the world's tigers is, it's just nice to hear populations going up.
But that's incredible, isn't it? Because we've heard for so long, I mean, the tiger has been a conservation problem for so long, hasn't it? The population, all you ever hear about is tigers. You know, there aren't going to be any tigers left in 10 years and in 5 years. So it's so heartwarming to hear stories like that, that they are now on the rise, population, and people are now protecting them.
Yeah, exactly. So reading, in Nepal, snow leopard population is stable. In India, tiger population going up is incredible. Yeah. I mentioned I had some news about rhinos. A really quick one line, because obviously I did the black rhino population rising in general, but in India and Nepal, again, the greater one-horned rhinoceros reached around 4,075 individuals. So again, a population going up. And I will tag this on to Asia. There's a chance you found this one as well, because it's a real global thing. But green turtles, did you have anything?
I've got green sea turtles. I've got a thing all about green sea turtles.
Okay, cool. I will leave that to you, because that's great news. But it's part of it happened in Indonesia, so I thought I'll get on that. But
no, I've got a little section all about. Okay, don't you steal my green turtle thunder.
I'll leave that for you. So there we go. I think Asia was the smallest one for me. It was partly because I ran out of time after doing so much of Africa. But the snow leopard tiger populations, new otter discovery, women protecting proboscis monkeys, fantastic things going on over there.
Fantastic. Okay, well, I've got Oceania. I had to look up what constituted Oceania.
I did last year.
And it's actually 14 independent countries, some of which I haven't heard of. Obviously Australia, Fiji, Kiribati, the Marshall Islands, Micronesia, Nauru, I don't know if that's how you pronounce it, New Zealand, Palau, Papua New Guinea, Samoa, Solomon Islands, Tonga, Tuvalu and Vanuatu. I don't know how to pronounce that.
We've done really well with the pronunciation.
Yeah, we have. Yeah. But Oceania, the British government could take a real...
But this is a positive.
I've got to read all of these out, because the Australian government is doing more than ever to protect and restore their environment and water. And these are all the steps that Australia are taking. And it is incredible. I've got to read them all out. So apologies for the fact that I'm doing that. We protect more ocean than any other country on earth, with more than half of Australian waters under protection. We've signed an international treaty to better protect the ocean. We're fighting to protect an extra 500 million hectares of ocean around Antarctica. We've tripled the size of the Macquarie Island Marine Park, the biggest act of environmental conservation anywhere in the world. We've quadrupled the size of Heard Island and McDonald Islands Marine Reserve, the biggest act of ocean conservation on the planet. We've protected an extra 70 million hectares of Australia's land and sea, an area bigger than Germany and Italy combined, with more to come. So just had to let the cat in. We're investing $224 million in Saving Nature Species program to support the recovery of unique plants and animals. We're cracking down on the cruel illegal trade of Australian native plants and animals, using world-leading technology to intercept smuggled animals at the border and rehabilitate them. We've kept the Great Barrier Reef off the World Heritage in danger list by better protecting it, with $1.2 billion investment and doubling funding for marine scientists who look after it. We've blocked a coal mine due to unacceptable risks to the Great Barrier Reef. And Australia is responsible for protecting the Antarctic environment as part of a collective international commitment under the Antarctic Treaty System. And they've invested more than $1.2 billion in the Antarctic program. Australia's working very hard.
That's a cracking list, that is.
I'm sorry to rattle that off really quickly, but I thought that was really good. Green sea turtles have shown a major population rebound from from endangered status, with the IUCN upgrading them to the least concern in late 2025. Isn't that incredible?
Yeah, I mean, I think, again, another animal, a bit like you said for tigers,
yeah.
Green turtles have always been a poster boy for conservation because they've been on such a massive decline for decades.
Well, and the success is due to decades of global conservation efforts, including the use of bycatch reduction devices in fisheries off Australia's coast. They've rebounded from their endangered status with a nearly 30% increase in population since the 70s, which is fantastic.
Yeah, and I mean, I will jump in and also say that I spotted similar news around these sort of Asian countries as well, because especially in Indonesia, lots of work's being done to stop poaching and make sure that eggs and are looked after and that the little baby turtles make it to the sea. So it's been a real, with it being an ocean animal, a real global effort.
And it's a bit sad, isn't it? Because they were sought after for meat, eggs and the shells due to wildlife trafficking. And I just
Just incredible to see an animal as prominent on conservation lists go from endangered to least concern.
So conservation efforts focused on protecting nesting females and their eggs on beaches, expanding community-based initiatives, which is what we've been talking about loads now. There are all these community-based and local based initiative to reduce unsustainable harvest of turtles and their eggs for human consumption and curtailing the wildlife trafficking trade.
Incredible news.
I can't believe
it hadn't popped up in my feed when the sort of IUCN list changed, but I love reading about it.
Anyway, lots of the news around Oceania, it seems to be protecting ocean life.
Makes sense, it's all islands, isn't it?
French Polynesia creates the world's largest marine park to protect ocean life. It's declared a massive new marine park covering its entire exclusive economic zone, which is 4.8 million square kilometres, nearly the size of the European Union.
That is insane.
Announced by President Mote Brotherson at the UN Ocean Conference, the park aims to protect both marine life and cultural traditions while limiting harmful activities like mining and industrial fishing. And this initiative blends science and tradition, setting a global example in ocean conservation for others to follow. I mean, it's absolutely massive. The waters are teeming with life. Sharks, whales, sea turtles, coral reefs, and they are amongst the healthiest ever studied because they are now being protected. It sustains livelihoods, nourishes communities, and anchors cultural identity. Protecting it means safeguarding a way of life. So that's a fantastic story.
That's an amazing story.
There's another one. Marshall Islands governments announced it will protect an area of the Pacific Ocean described as one of the most remote, pristine marine ecosystems on Earth. So a lot of it's about protecting the oceans out there. Have you heard of a bawbaw frog?
No, I haven't.
Over 3,000 tiny bawbaw frogs. That's spelled B-A-W-B-A-W, bawbaw frogs, and they've been released into the wild. And it's a record-breaking release of bawbaw frogs, bringing new hope for one of Australia's rarest amphibians. What fascinated me is that the froglets are the size of a grain of rice.
Oh, blimey.
Yeah, they are.
That is awesome. I love a frog.
And once common, the species has suffered a dramatic 98% population decline, devastated by a deadly fungal disease and other threats, including climate change and habitat loss. And the newly hatched froglets, each no bigger than a grain of rice, were raised by Zoos Victoria as part of an ambitious effort to save this endangered species. And the tiny frogs would be monitored using, they must be very small, miniature radio transmitters. How do you get that onto a froglet the size of a grain of rice? I don't know. But they're also with the help of specially trained sniffer dogs, which is just all good conservation stuff, isn't it?
Yeah, that's
fantastic
awesome
stuff. What else have I got? Samoa established 9 new marine protected areas in 2025, covering 30% of its ocean, continuing with the ocean protection.
Makes sense, I think, with where it is in the world.
Paolo has protected 80% of its offshore waters, creating a national shark sanctuary and banning destructive fishing. So most of the stuff around Oceania is all about protecting the ocean for obvious reasons. It's all island life. But there's some great conservation stuff there. And it just goes to show that, you know, we get hit by bad news. Newspapers hit you with bad news all the time. But if you go looking for it, there are so many heartwarming and amazing conservation and projects that are going on to save wildlife and habitats and the ocean.
Local communities as well.
Local communities, and to ban wildlife trafficking, and there's so much good stuff.
Like we said at the beginning, it's one of the reasons why I love this tradition, because obviously the episodes we do throughout the year focusing mainly on the UK normally focuses on something bad, but then something really good to combat whatever the bad thing is. But it's very much within the bubble of the UK, and so it's quite nice to sit down and be like, do you know what, even though we saw all the bad news in 2025, there's so many good things happening, and people are out there all the time fighting for wildlife. Absolutely. And it's very easy to forget that when all we see is bad stuff happening.
Well, so and also, we could have talked for another hour, because I've still got reams of notes on stuff. So, I mean, we've been going nearly an hour now, so we will stop.
And it's obviously, I've not heard yours and you've not heard mine, so it's nice for me to sit here and hear about all the things that I didn't research as well.
It's been a good episode. I've really enjoyed that.
Well, I've still got Europe to do.
Ah, you've got Europe to do.
Still got Europe to do.
Crikey Moses.
I did say buckle in, but it's going to be a long one. So,
I've forgotten you've still got one more to go. Hey, hit me with some more good news stories.
Okay, cool. One from Devon. Pine martens successfully bred in Devon for the first time in more than a century.
Beautiful animal.
Devon Wildlife Trust reintroduced 15 pine martens back in 2024 following a 100-year absence. But in 2025, camera trap footage at a secret site revealed the first glimpses of kits born. And it was the first time, and the word they used, the conservationists were ecstatic to see that the animals had successfully bred. The quote being, to have breeding pine martens back after a century of absence signals a positive step in nature's recovery. They were obviously once quite a common animal across the UK, but the woodland habitat and human loss of the habitat and human persecution caused their extinction. And yeah, they had two films showing these young pine martens exploring their new home, with one clip showing three kits chasing each other through the leaves up the bank of a Dartmoor woodland. So
beautiful.
Lovely to
beautiful
see
animal.
Them
yeah.
back. Do you want, sticking with the UK, red squirrels in Scotland are doing really well. They've expanded their range across the Highlands by more than a quarter after a 10-year reintroduction program moved hundreds into new homes.
So does that mean they've had to move the greys out?
Well, along with grey squirrel sort of management, the range of the red squirrels goes a bit further north. There are areas where the grey squirrels haven't quite reached, and so they focus there, but they have also done quite a lot of grey squirrel management.
Yeah.
So the reintroductions of the reds, as they were called, missing from most of their former range in the north and northwest Highlands, with last recorded sightings generally in the 1970s, and so it's been a decade-long project to restore them, and they've expanded by more than 25%. In 2025 alone, 259 red squirrels were relocated into 13 restored woodlands. And these licensed reintroductions essentially each move small numbers of animals from healthy populations around Inverness, Moray and Strathspey to suitable woodlands in the north and northwest where they are safe from greys. Red squirrels cannot reach these havens without help because they're not very good at crossing large open spaces. So once the population is healthy, they then move them and they're re-establishing these populations, which means that the range is expanding. So
that is good to hear.
It's fantastic.
The red squirrel population declines so bad.
They're beautiful as
they
well.
They are beautiful.
So I've also got, because it's an animal close to our heart, beavers are back in Portugal.
Yes.
So after, again, centuries of absence, the European beaver has returned to Portuguese territory. It's finally sort of emerging after lots of rewilding of Portugal, especially around the border with Spain. But there was a lot of effort to essentially help it's 2 decades worth of recovery of the population within Spain. And now that they've rewilded and made the habitat suitable in Portugal, they're crossing the border. And so it's the first time they've had European.
We do like a beaver, good beaver story, don't we?
They said that the dispersal of this true river engineer to Portuguese territory represents not only the return of a species that was once locally extinct, but also one of the most significant steps in aquatic rewilding of our rivers, because
fantastic.
Just need beavers, don't you? Yeah. So they've seen gnawing marks and all sorts. They're all very happy to have beavers back. I really liked this project called Seal Grease. Seal as in the animal seal.
Right.
So the Mediterranean monk seal is slowly recovering, but there's new challenges popping up, mostly around interactions with humans and tourism. People want to go see the seals, but the interaction can put the quite rare marine animals and their habitats at a bit of risk. Greece is home to a real significant portion of the remaining monk seal and has designated nearly 20% of its waters as protected areas. But a lot of these sites sort of lack the management plans and the enforcement mechanisms needed to protect the seals. And so seal grease, which is just brilliant, is essentially a bunch of people, a bunch of conservationists, on eco-friendly, zero-emission sailing boats, sailing around the Ionian seas, stopping at various ports and marinas and anchorages to talk to people and educate people on how to interact properly and manage and things like that, and essentially promote the protection of the Mediterranean monk seal. It's come to an end now. They covered nearly 1,000 nautical miles, one for each of the approximately 1,000 Mediterranean monk seals that still remain. So it was a huge educational outreach program to promote ecotourism, safe interactions, and the management.
Which is great, isn't it? Because we've talked a lot about, a lot of it is down to education, isn't it? And you know, obviously educating people to look after the wildlife.
I just thought, what a cool thing to be part of, sailing around the sea, stopping at ports and talking to people about seals.
You sailed around the Ionian Sea.
Long time ago.
Not looking at seals.
But no. We did see dolphins.
We did see dolphins.
Another one that I liked was Wilder Parks, which is a big leap forward for Europeans' protected areas. They've long played a vital role in protecting wildlife and habitats, but there's a huge potential to make them wilder. In November, 10 protected areas took a bold step forward, becoming the first wilder parks in Europe. Across a total of 790,000 hectares of land and sea, it will give natural processes more space and freedom to restore ecosystems and amplify the benefits that they provide for nature, climate, and people. This is a Rewilding Europe project, known as Wilder Parks. And the first 10 parks have already been announced. They're across all sorts of European countries. I won't list them all, but they're essentially supposed to be a rewilding showcase, inspiring other protected areas to follow their lead, catalyzing systematic change across Europe's vast protected network, with additional protected areas joining the initiative in 2027. So
any rewilding news is good for me because it's always so heartwarming to hear those as well.
Well, on that, I'm coming to the end, but Young Rewilders is an organisation for young people into conservation and rewilding, built on a passion for the wild and delivering positive rewilding impact on the ground. In between 2022 to 2025, over 1,000 young rewilders are part of that network across 31 European countries. And they do all sorts of projects and community meetups and everything to help young people breathe new life into wild nature in Europe. So what a cool organisation.
Yeah, really cool.
I've got marine protected areas in Spain. The Spanish government has given a go-ahead to 6 new MPAs, as they're called, offering a lifeline to vulnerable species. They include lots of the Alborian Sea, the central Catalan coast, the Mallorca Channel. They cover 17,000 square kilometers, an area roughly the size of Kuwait. But I don't know how big Kuwait is. So really
no, it sounds quite big, doesn't it?
And I'll finish on this one, which I thought was quite cool. The University of Manchester has launched the world's first MSc, so that's Master of Science, in Nature Recovery, Restoration and Rewilding, helping equip a new generation with the skills needed to rewild ecosystems and reconnect people with nature.
Yeah, yeah.
So you can now go and get a master's degree in rewilding, which I think is just
brilliant. Do that. Do you think they'll take an older geezer on?
So didn't know that, but that's brilliant. Fantastic. From the University of Manchester. So I'd not heard of Young Rewilders, but having 1,000 young people involved in rewilding.
I've said it so many times, it's the younger generation that's going to save the planet, and they need to get involved.
Yeah. I mean, there are so many stories from Europe. There are loads of things, from vulture restorations, obviously things happening in the UK, like we've spoken about, water voles are coming back, beavers in the UK. Yeah. There was talk about the European bison.
I could have done the bison recovery in North America.
Bison, the European bison was another big one that I left off, because I feel like we've spoken about it at some point.
Yeah, I got bison in Kent.
Yeah, I know.
On a farm in Kent.
I remember when that project first started, seeing a job opportunity, and I really wanted to go be part of it, but you had to have experience wrangling large mammals.
And I'll tell you what, they are large. Oh,
yeah. I really wanted that job.
But they were pretty much hunted to extinction in North America, and now they've made a big recovery. There's been a big bison recovery project going on, which I've got lists of notes
there
about.
It was heartwarming to see. I loved the Wilder Parks, because I think that's amazing. I love hearing that beavers are making a return to other places as well.
Well, I think every rewilding project that I've read about in the last few years has had such a big impact, and also reacted so quickly to the rewilding.
Yeah.
Nature has reacted so quickly, and every project I've read about, they've said, oh, you know, within a year, we've got this coming back in, and those butterflies have reappeared, and we've never seen Nightingale's there before, and now they've come in, and it happens so fast.
Yeah, we've spoken about it before, where it's such an incredible approach, rather than saying, oh, we need to protect this one species, rewilding a habitat and then letting the species come back. And all right, sometimes you need to reintroduce the species to kickstart it, but the actual just letting nature recover and rewild and then watching it develop is amazing. And like you just said, the speed at which the wildlife comes back is always mind-blowing. Fantastic.
And isn't it amazing that we've got more and more we could have talked about?
I've got so many, and I feel like I've spoken at 1,000 miles an hour to try and get all these through.
I think I've spoken a bit fast in this episode.
It's still taken about an hour, so. But
we probably ought to stop there now.
Yeah. Oh, last thing. Very last thing.
I know when you do that.
Last thing. This was actually, I put this under subtitle, Other Good News, but it follows on from the rewilding. The International Union for Conservation of Nature, so that's the IUCN, released the first ever global guidelines for rewilding. This marked a turning point for the movement, recognising rewilding as a legitimate science-based and essential approach by one of the world's most influential conservation authorities. So again, it's really legitimising the concept of rewilding, and it's a real turning point for the whole movement of let's rewild. So that, I didn't know that. That's fantastic coming out of the IUCN.
Oh, I was going to mention one last thing, that when I was doing the research, a lot of the stuff that was cropping up, which I thought was encouraging, was the fact that renewable energy, solar and wind and renewables, are starting to overtake fossil fuel energy. And actually, even in America, even with Donald Trump, who's now denouncing and banning it all, but even in America, that renewables and solar energy now are taking over on usage to fossil fuel energy. And I saw that on not just in America, but all across the world.
Yeah, I saw it quite a few times and ended up not putting it in because I focused on the wildlife stuff. But there were things about, so certainly in China and India, I think I saw something, I can't remember the number of months, but in Poland, renewables overtook coal. Yeah.
And Australia, again, I highlighted Australia and the work they're doing. Renewables in Australia are overtaking
a lot of news.
Fossil fuel energy.
I think I even saw a stat saying that parts of Europe were on track for the renewable target of 2030. Yeah. So there's a lot of good,
which is a really encouraging
stuff,
news,
that's not
it?
Necessarily wildlife, and we focus very much on the wildlife here.
Yeah, I just thought I'd throw
but
that in.
I saw that as well, and it was again nice to see because we always see the headlines about renewables being binned off or whatever, but actually, last year a lot of energy was generated through renewables.
The only thing I don't like is all the concrete they're pouring in the sea to put wind farms in the sea.
Yeah, there was always a downside to things.
Anyway, but, we're going off tangent a little bit there.
It was lovely to see all the good stuff going on.
Yeah,
I hope we haven't spoken at a million miles an hour, but we've got to be excited. We haven't podcasted for a while, and there's so much good stuff to talk about. Yeah. And it's very rare that we do an episode that doesn't start off with, here's the bad thing that happened to a species. It's all just
it's all good stuff.
Good things. But here's to another year of podcasting done.
Yeah.
Here's to another year of podcasting ahead.
We've got so much to talk
about.
Loads
to talk about. I will try and make sense when I'm in the depths of new parenthood.
Yeah.
But...
I'll keep you awake with some coffee, mate.
It'll be fine. I'm just going to be absolutely off my nut, aren't I?
No, it's going to be the best time
be
of
great.
Your life, mate. Trust me.
But thank you to everyone who listened in 2025.
Yeah, we really appreciate it. And we really appreciate the nice comments that we've had as well. So,
and hopefully you've enjoyed this. It's a little bit late. We normally do it right at the beginning of the year, but hopefully, you know, a week or so into 2026, a nice little burst of positivity, a reminder that across the world people are fighting for wildlife and nature. Don't forget to go and follow us on Instagram at the Birdie Bug Pod. Don't forget to go and buy cool curly merch from birdielens.com/shop. And thank you very much. We'll catch you next time.
Yes, catch you next time. Thanks very much for listening.
Bye.
Bye.